What's your name and when did you join Tameside Autism Group?
Well, I'm Richard Finch and I heard about Tameside Autism Group through contacting the Manchester group. And eventually I got enough information from them to find out that there was a group in Tameside, and they must have told the Tameside, Dan at the Tameside group, because sometime after this I got a letter from Dan saying they were starting up this group at Hyde. Well, I live Roaches, about halfway between Mosley and Greenfield, so it was feasible to get to Hyde, and so I began to come along.
That's fantastic, thank you. And the actual Manchester group is the actual website www.asgma.org.uk.
I'm not sure what it is, and it is called ASGMA because that is how I first found out about the autism when the group was originally held at Bowker Vale. And that is many years back, 1992.
Okay, thank you. Your article blog is very interesting for providing awareness issues of autism and Asperger's. When did you first realise that some people have autism or Asperger's? And when was it that you were given a diagnosis for autism and Asperger's?
Well, my sister read the article, read a resume of the film Rain Man. She has never seen the film, neither have I. And she suspected something, and then she suspected something in her uncles, in other words, my uncles as well, but one of them was now dead by then, but the other one was still alive. And so I thought, some of this article makes sense. And I found out there was a group in Manchester, the Manchester group, ASGMA, and they held meetings one evening at Bowker Vale, near Heaton Park. I was living at East Didsbury, so it depends what the transport's like, but it's feasible to get there. And I went along to the meetings just to listen, to hear what was going on, to speak to people. And one evening I was speaking to, she's an official National Autistic Society, and she more or less chaired and ran the meetings. She was called Brenda Nally. She's now retired. But I always had to run away by 10 o'clock. Otherwise, if I missed that tram, I'd miss the train back from Piccadilly to get home. And I'd be very late travelling by bus. So I told her, I said, well, look at my watch. It's nearly 10 o'clock. I've got to run and get this tram. Oh, she said, you live near East Didsbury, don't you? I said, yes. She said, I live not far from there. I've come in my car. I'll give you a lift. Forget about the tram. So I forgot about the tram. Went home with Brendan Alley in the car. And in the half-hour drive, and remember, she was driving, so she couldn't talk to me all the time. She knew. You cannot hide Asperger's syndrome from a professional. And she could tell I had this problem. And she told me to go with her name, I think, to my GP in Didsbury. So I went along to the GP and explained this situation, and fortunately he was receptive about this, managed to arrange for me to be interviewed by, I think, a psychologist, and this was done at St Mary's Hospital.
When the actual diagnosis for the psychologist, and you got the diagnosis results for the psychologist, how old were you then and what year was it?
Well, this was 2 years later. This was 1994. And it was done at St Mary's Hospital, just behind Manchester Royal Infirmary. I'm not quite sure how they came to this diagnosis, but there was one thing I noticed particularly. I was, 1994, I was 48. Now, for someone of 48, they do not ask you to go along with your mother. Her mother was 84 at the time. But she lost nothing of her mental faculties, nor had she lost any of her memory. And then I realised at the interview why she was being asked. Because they specifically asked my mother, did she see any of what she saw in me in relatives that she knew when she was growing up? She said, yes, she did. In her two brothers, in other words, my uncles, to some extent in her father, in other words, my maternal grandfather, and in particular to an elderly aunt. Now, I could never have met this aunt because I don't think this aunt lived more than until after about 1920. She said she was a particularly awkward person, indeed. And they were very interested in this because this meant that my mother's memory, my mother was born in 1910, and her memory went back to about 1915. But she was remembering how people around her in the family had acted. And these people had been born back in the 1870s, and this was important for the epidemiological studies.
What I was going to say is, when you were given a diagnosis, who was it that gave you a diagnosis? And when this occurred at that time, was there any practical support or referral support or any aftercare in any way?
One, I cannot remember the name of the person who gave me the diagnosis, but if I can discover the diagnostic papers, which I have at home, so I can find his name. As for support or practical advice, nothing.
So what you're saying is when you were, how did the diagnosis, did they actually give you a report or verbally say you got the diagnosis?
It was a report.
And did the report go to your GP as well?
I presume it did, yes, it was.
And did they say, look, we're going to provide this support for you afterwards?
No. I mean, I had a job, it wasn't wonderful, it was part, well, I'd been working with my sister in a picture framing shop, but as the family grew up, the shop was too much for her, and she began doing it from home. Now, I only worked part-time with the picture framing, and the rest of the time, I'd ended up driving a bus, mainly on contract work.
Have you found any information support to be misleading for the Autism and Asperger's meeting support venues? Have you found the meetings to be miles away and have lateness factors or public transport issues?
Well, soon after I was diagnosed, my training is horticulture, and I was asked to go back onto the estate I've been working on in Hampshire some years before. So I said, well, they would pay me, not very much, but also this included a tied cottage, which I could live in free. So I said I would go back to Hampshire, especially as I was only working by then part-time and earning very little driving these contract buses. Now, while I could get to the Manchester meetings, still at Boker Vale, when I went to Hampshire, which was 3 miles from Liss, 25 miles from Portsmouth, I sent to the NAS to find out...
Which is a National Autistic Society.
Yes. Where are the nearest meetings?
Did you phone them up, or was it on the website?
No, I think I telephoned. I don't know how to use a website anyway. And now, the nearest meetings they offered me were, I think... Chichester, Winchester, both of those are completely impractical in case, unless you have your own transport. Winchester is about 20 miles from Liss, Chichester is 25 miles. The most likely venue, which was for adults as well, was Newport. Great. It's 25 miles from Liss, about, to Portsmouth Harbour on the train, then get a ferry. You can't do that in an evening and get back. In other words, there was nothing. Nothing practical anyway.
So because you totally relied on public transport in the area.
It was
massively difficult to get to these venues.
I did have my own transport, but I couldn't afford to have used it for that distance. The reason I had my own transport was I had an old van which I could use for collecting things for the estate, but they paid me for the fuel for that, but there was no way I could afford the fuel for taking it 50-mile round trip to Chichester, or 40 mile to Winchester.
I do understand. So sometimes perhaps the referral support from the National Autistic Society, if it was more of an idea of what the limitations of the individual were, if they didn't have their own transport and they had to rely on public transport, then they had a better idea on what the personal circumstances of the individual are, and give response in back to that, it would be far better, wouldn't it?
Well, you're not going to have... The fact is that where I live was a very rural area. You're not going to have handy local meetings. It's just not practical. I mean, the cottage I lived in on the estate, it was 3 miles to the nearest railway station, or about the same to the nearest bus. That's how remote it was. And the nearest villages, towns, this is a population of only 4,000. You're not going to have meetings there.
Right, that's totally understandable, yeah. What I was going to say is... Do you think it's a good idea for information that's accurate and supportive to be on the Autism and Asperger's website? And is it a good idea to provide in some situations... These technology may not understand, like live video conferencing of meetings, or live text chat of meetings, and downloadable documents, or downloadable podcasts, or downloadable and watchable video meetings, and also contact details of key support people to be available on the Autism website. Are those kind of 21st century ideas, are those quite good ideas?
Well, they are, for much younger people who've learned how to use these things. I'm not young anymore. I'm, at the time of this interview, I'm 66, and I've never learned how to use them. But if you're in a remote spot, probably little option but to learn how to use them, because it's the only way you can contact others. But there was the piece on the last question you asked is about contact details. Now, there's one thing I've found throughout life. When things go awry, something's going wrong, you want somebody to ask for help. Now, you may only want this help for about half an hour, and you may not need that help for a couple of years or more. But if it's not forthcoming, you can get in a terrible mess.
Yeah.
Now, this sort of help would be extremely useful, but I've no idea how it could be worked out. It's some sort of advocacy service, because... Usually it would happen with people moving and possibly to a job. Now, most people with Asperger's syndrome probably have little or no trouble with the technology of the job. Where it will go wrong is the social aspects of the job. The hours possibly, of getting there possibly, dealing with the other people at work. But you'll probably have little problems with the actual technology of the job. But it's these... Other problems which are going to cause trouble. You may end up never settling in with the job. Now then, at this point, you need somebody to ask for help, and it's probably not going to be any use asking somebody at work.
Yeah, I do understand, yeah. How in a wide arena of ideas could greater support be provided? When you look back and realise how things are today, and with maybe the use of technology, how could there be better support given for anyone with autism or Asperger's?
Well, the main one is the one I've outlined. It's a sort of advocacy arrangement. But I've never lived or worked for any length of time in a town. I was born in a city, I was born in Manchester, but I've never actually worked in a city for very long. And if you're in a remote spot, you can be very, very cut off from any sort of help. It's easier in some ways to live there because you don't have lots of people to see to. You don't have a lot of complicated situations such as security and so on in a rural spot. Life's a lot simpler. But on the other hand, by its very nature, a remote and remote rural spot is remote from facilities and help, and that's why, particularly with today's technology and people being much younger have learned how to use that, a means of getting hold of the help, even if you can't physically go and see the person.
Yeah,
this is what would be most useful.
And what exactly would these, if for example, in a future scenario, these advocate support workers connected to people with autism or Asperger's, would it be like a free phone number connection line to a service, or and what exactly would they do as a job task? What would they do?
I don't know. And again, there's always the possibility that some people might abuse the service. I think it's going to be very difficult to prevent abuse of it. Some people would abuse it, I'm sure, but most people would not. I'm not sure whether a free phone number is feasible, because free phone numbers actually cost a lot for the providers of the service. Probably 0845 would be better in a way. But with the more modern technology, it can be done by a computer, and so it would not cost so much. And most people, younger people particularly, are connected to this now. For older people, I'm not quite sure, because someone like me who's retired, you may or may not have learned how to use these things. Although, you can learn how to use it in a library. It's not easy. And again, in a rural spot, a library is not that easy to get to either. But I'm learning very, very slowly, admittedly, at Greenfield Library. And the people teaching me are very good, but how much I will learn, I don't know.
That's fantastic. Well, concluding, thank you for providing these great and useful answers to these questions that will give a much improved insight into how more effective care could be provided. Thank you, Richard, for the interview.